Cinema Classics is brought to you by the Gateway Film Center at the South Campus Gateway at 1550 North High Street. For showtimes and details, find them online at gatewayfilmcenter.com.
Cinema Classics is produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. Listen to the shows online at wcbe.org. I'm John DeSando.
I'm Johnny DiLoretto. This is Cinema Classics. We are at the Gateway Film Center. And I'm going to tell you right off with this conversation, what I don't want to get sucked into is this book comparison to the movies, you know, and that makes me nuts, that conversation.
Hey, if I ever have to review a movie, I make sure I haven't read the book. I don't like that conflict. I don't think there's any fairness in comparing the two. So what we're doing today is taking one of the premier novelists of our time, mm-hmm. Cormac McCarthy,
right.
And talking about several of the films that have been adapted to film and the one that he has written originally for the screen.
Right. Now, Cormac McCarthy, I found out on IMDb, was called by Harold Bloom, esteemed literary critic, one of the top four American novelists of his time. He placed him in the same realm as Thomas Pynchon, Philip Roth, and Don DeLillo. Do you agree?
DeLillo, I don't know that well. Pynchon, he's much better, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. than Pynchon. And Roth, he's not as powerful as Roth.
Right.
But he, in his particular genre, which would be a type of modern Western, he's incomparable.
Yeah.
You know, and there is the Cormac McCarthy genius. He takes myths that we have lived with for almost a century, and he takes them and he modernizes them, but makes characters kind of pull the beauty and the ugliness of the past into the present.
Go ahead, guys. You can.
Yeah.
You can just.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Take it from describing Cormac McCarthy's works, but let me preface it with this. So before we get down and dirty with this conversation, I got to admit something to you.
Okay.
I've never read a Cormac McCarthy book.
Okay, we're talking movies here, not novels.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah. I figured maybe one conversation illuminates the other conversation.
It does.
So
it does.
Describe to me what kind of writer he is.
There is a certain Hemingway-esque simplicity about it. But he also has a beauty in his descriptions that you stop and say, that's gorgeous, and it's always that minimalist that I really love.
Mm-hmm.
His characters are not overly conflicted. They're looking. They're searching. Now, I grant you that in the progression of the films that we're talking about today, he has become much darker.
Well, okay. This guy, I'm assuming, has been writing for a long time.
Yeah.
But the first adaptation of one of his works wasn't made until 2000.
That's correct.
All the Pretty Horses.
Got it.
And that was, if you'll remember, right around that time, you know, Sling Blade had just come out.
Oh, good, yeah.
There was all this excitement about Billy Bob Thornton.
That's right.
What a unique creative force this guy was, right? He wrote, directed, and starred in Sling Blade, and then... You know, he was the screenwriter behind a movie, one of my favorite 90s noir films called One False Move, and he played the bad guy in that. So here comes Billy Bob Thornton, and maybe he just bit off a little more than he could chew.
Well,
what happened there?
3, 2, 1. In my perspective, Billy Bob Thornton just tried to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't heavily get into themes, into interpretation, or even full character development. He took two attractive young men, one of them being Matt Damon, sends them down south of the border to kind of look for fulfillment, the kind of fulfillment that young men looked when they were going west. They're just going south. But there wasn't anything more than that. It felt to me, and I'm just trying to remember 13 years ago, that Billy Bob was telling a story, but he wasn't getting beyond that. And I was really surprised. I thought anybody could flip out in a film, it would be Billy Bob. He didn't.
Yeah.
So it was difficult for him to adapt Cormac McCarthy.
Well, clearly Billy Bob Thornton never fulfilled the promise that he showed in Sling Blade. Another Cormac McCarthy film adaptation was not made until 7 years later.
Isn't that amazing?
I love it. Well, because, you know, All the Pretty Horses, it had this great pedigree. Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton, Cormac McCarthy. Everybody was excited. Yeah. It was supposed to be an Oscar contender, and it disappeared without a whiff.
Yep.
I mean, no one paid that movie any mind. And we don't even think about it or reconsider it these years later. It's just a whiff of a movie.
But only 7 years later,
then the
Ace de Resistance.
Yeah, the Coen brothers adapt No Country for Old Men.
Oh.
And not only did they, you know, again, I have not read a Cormac McCarthy novel, nor have I read, so I haven't read.
Yeah.
But No Country for Old Men, for me, was the first great Coen brothers movie in nearly a decade. You know, I'm a huge Coen Brothers fan. As far as I'm concerned, their best movies, their first four movies. And so I haven't seen what I consider a really great Coen Brothers movie since Fargo.
Well,
so here it comes, No Country for Old Men.
And for me, it was picking up on the spirit of Eastwood in Unforgiven and taking it, modernizing it.
Stack of chairs just fell over.
For me, he was taking the spirit of Eastwood from The Unforgiven, from 3-2-1. He was taking Eastwood's spirit from Unforgiven and translating that into a more modern setting with still the same feel that the West had changed.
Okay.
And that evil was not the evil you always knew.
Yeah.
And so I really felt the spirit of Eastwood there, but regardless.
Really, that's interesting because I've never seen any sort of overlap there in terms of Unforgiven and No Country. I mean, I always saw it more of just almost a very prototypical Coen Brothers crime movie where a guy gets in over his head and then just set in the West.
Yes.
You know, it has those trappings, the Western trappings, but it reminded me more of those contemporary Westerns like Lonely Are the Brave, you know, where there's a guy, Kirk Douglas, and he's on this spiral down, and no saving him.
Yeah.
And there's no saving him against Javier Bardem. Obviously, that interpretation of that character became one of the great villainous portrayals of the last 10 years.
Yeah, and you'll see that what McCarthy does is to update evil.
Mm-hmm.
So where in No Country for Old Men, you have Anton Chigurh, that is Javier Bardem, riding around in some pressurized tank that spits out these, that actually prods cattle or something.
No, that's what they use to kill cows.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it's a cat. It's like when they go to the slaughterhouse and that's what they use to kill them instantly.
Right.
They blow that blast of air into their brain.
So why not use that on people?
Why not? Well, if it kills a cow.
It does.
Right?
And so to me, that's the kind of touch that Cormac McCarthy has without blasting away at the evil or the murder or whatever. It just slowly, insidiously, and almost inevitably comes and kind of translates into a modern corruption.
Well, obviously with that movie, you know, filmmakers saw maybe you could make a great movie out of a Cormac McCarthy novel.
Yes, oh.
And so a couple of years after that, just 2 years.
But let's remind everybody that it won the Oscar.
Yeah, it did win the Oscar. Yeah. Right, so now clearly everybody was going to go running back to that well.
Got it.
And the first movie that came out of that reconsideration is The Road.
Oh, boy.
A very dark, post-apocalyptic movie.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, more 3-2-1. It is more violent in its own way than Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bleak world in the novel and the way Cormac McCarthy sets it up.
Okay.
But you can work with it. You can go with Dad and the kid and you can go toward the sea, and it has a certain sense about it that this is the way it has to be if you're going to survive.
Right.
The movie adaptation, the 3-2-1, the movie adaptation is so dark you almost metaphorically can't see it. There's something went wrong in trying to adapt him. So this is...
Well, here's the thing. You know, I remember when this movie was being made, the argument was that there's no way this guy is going to keep it as dark as the book. No way. Right? That John Hillcoat, the director, and they were saying, there's no way he's going to keep it dark. You might as well write this movie off now because he's going to be some Hollywoodized bullcrap. And it turns out that he did stay true to that dark vision.
He did.
There is... I think The Road is not, it's not a bad film. There's something lacking about it. I don't know if it's Viggo Mortensen who for me doesn't convey, I don't know if he misses the mark on his portrayal of a father in that situation. Charlize Theron, I think, is a little miscast
there. I think that's the flashback stuff.
Yeah.
And you have it for the kid, too, for her. So there's something about that as a relief from the present, the grime and the grit of the present to go back to her. But, yeah, you're right. And I'd have to go back to analyze and tell you why it doesn't work.
I just know that I've had no desire to revisit it. And in a movie like that, I would revisit had it just struck the right notes. Also, why can't I think of his name? Bobby Duvall, Robert Duvall. 3, 2. And right before the third act begins, Robert Duvall shows up as this kind of mysterious, you know, old man.
Yes.
And I just felt that was exactly what I just said. It was like a third act device. You know what I mean?
It was a loss. It was a loss because, of course, Duvall has so much to offer.
He's so great.
Yeah.
Right.
And in that kind of a setting, who better than that cynical guy to be there? And it didn't. Yeah.
Mortensen and Duvall have no chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, nor does he have much chemistry with the kid. So that movie was a loss.
Yep. Strangely.
Yes.
3, 2, 1. Strangely, about 3 or 4 years later, a couple of movies come out that indicate what we have been kind of playing around with, that McCarthy's not easy. Now, you take a wunderkind like James Franco.
Yeah.
And a movie that apparently came out just within the year.
What, has that been released?
I don't know, but it's been reviewed. It's been out there. It's called Child of God.
So he did make it?
He did make it.
Interesting. James Franco adapted a Cormac McCarthy novel. Do you know what it's about?
Oh, it's more of the same darkness of The Road, only it's about a guy who descends in his life down to being really a caveman. He loses everything in his life. He's bitter, cynical, and Franco wrote it, starred in it, along with...
So he plays he directs himself as
Yes, that's correct. Yep. And I can't tell you, I haven't seen it, so I don't know. All it does is tell me that it's something a little bit like what we had before in The Road, but it's not gone anywhere. It's not been distributed. As far as I know, it's not been distributed to us.
Right, let me see here.
Check that.
I want to look it up. Yeah, well, a quick online search, John, tells us that Child of God was released to little or no fanfare. In fact... quite a lot of negative reviews.
And with Tim Blake Nelson in that kind of a setting, I'd have loved to have seen it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that brings us to a current release that came out just a few weeks ago, which is The Counselor.
The Counselor, right.
Ridley Scott's follow-up to Prometheus. I thought the trailer for this movie had me so excited for a stylistic crime, you know, moral turpitude exploration.
Yep.
Type of movie with such a great cast, including Michael Fassbender, who is like on top of his game right now.
He is
one of the most exciting young actors.
12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
He should be nominated.
This guy's great.
Yeah.
And so the movie, you liked it.
I liked the movie. And I know why people are not going to like it, because it's...
A lot of people don't like it.
Yeah, I know that. It's not making any money.
Yeah.
And I think the timing may be wrong in the movie for some reason, but it's a really solid... It's just... amping up No Country for Old Men.
Okay.
It's taking it and it's making it even more more violent, making it more poignant as far as contemporary despair.
Okay.
So it's
so see, that sounds great.
Yes.
They're amping up the violence, amping up the moral despair.
Got it. Got it.
That's why. How is that not terrific?
Well, I believe it is. And you have... one of the most memorable sex scenes in all of film.
Really?
Cameron Diaz,
I've
of all people. Yes.
I've heard about this scene.
And don't be afraid, as I'm telling you this, that you couldn't see it with your husband or wife. It will be simply a curiosity that you will never forget.
It's a sexual. It's a this sex scene between Cameron Diaz,
yes,
Javier Bardem, and a car. Right?
Yes, a convertible. Right. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But it also in McCarthy.
It'll suffice it to say that Javier Bardem has to use his windshield wiper.
But what adds a little turn of the screw for me for Cormac McCarthy is that we have two sex scenes. We have an opening scene between Fassbender and Penelope Cruz.
Okay.
That they're covered in white sheets with a little bit of billowing wind coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And much of what happens underneath the sheets while they talk. It's a most unusual and a very fine contrast to the degradation that will come in that movie to open up the film with that. So for those who think that Cormac McCarthy is not sexy,
yeah,
please go see this movie and you will see very fine sex.
Well, based on the reviews for Child of God and the box office performance of The Counselor, don't expect to see another adaptation of a Cormac McCarthy novel anytime soon.
Oh, dear.